This is a podcast from Minute Media.
All aboard!
We play. That's what we do. We don't talk, we play. You come to Foxborough, it's going to be snowing, it's going to be cold. Come on in here. You want to say all you want? You want to change the rules? Change them. We still play, and we win. That's what we do. Malcolm, go!
It right here and
that's,
stop the clock.
That's what he'll do. He'll spike it here.
7 seconds. They got Vinatieri in range.
I'll tell you, what Tom Brady just did gives me goosebumps.
He has certainly got plenty of distance. I was watching him before the game, and he was... Well, he pulled that one in pregame, but most of them he hit in pregame, and he doesn't miss many. This would be from 48 yards
out. And this has been a year about Vinatieri and making some great kicks against the Raiders. Two of the greatest kicks that I've ever seen in my life.
Here comes one of greater importance if he makes it, and it's right down the pipe. Adam Vinatieri.
Okay, that just ended in the middle of the clip, so that's great. Anyway, it's the Malcolm Go podcast. It is February 9th, 2022. With us today, with the boys today, is Mike Dussault of Patriots.com, content creator, friend of the show. I've been following him for a long time. He was with Pat's Propaganda. Well, that was you, right? That was you from way back when. And now you're doing content creation for the Patriots themselves, man. How do you make that transition?
Oh, well, it's a long story. How long's the podcast?
As long as you want.
I mean, the short of it, I can give you the short of the top. I grew up around here in Boston, and Patriots stunk when I was a kid. I moved to LA after I graduated college, and was in LA for 18 years, worked in television out there. Wow. And kind of on the side, when the Patriots, I guess, when they started winning Super Bowls, I was like, oh crap, I move away, they get good. It was kind of, the internet was starting, message boards, all that stuff. So I kind of started out on patsfans.com and, really getting into talking football with people. And I really wanted to learn more about the game. That was a big part of kind of driving to write and wanting to, blog about. So, I started writing for like Bleacher Report, and the first blog I had was this guy. It was a Craigslist ad that was like, hey, do you want to write about your favorite sports team and make money?
You get paid in roses. Remember, they used to you had to pay hookers in roses.
So it was NewEnglandPatriotsNews.com. And the guy was probably ahead of his time. He had like a whole social network where he kind of like bought out every NFL team, news.com, and almost had it like a Facebook where, you'd write about your team. And so I probably made about a grand total of like 6 cents off of that.
doing better than us on fansided.com, on Musket Fire.
Yeah, well, hey, I wrote for Pat's Pulpit for a little bit. Yeah, and so, I was doing a lot of the free writing. And at a certain point, I just said, hey, I just want to write when I want, what I want about the Patriots. And that kind of started as a Tumblr blog, and then it became a website, Pat's Propaganda, which was then really just full writing. And that set the stage for, getting the job when I moved back here in 2017. And so I was back for a couple of years freelancing around here. And saw Andy Hart was leaving, emailed Fred Kirsch right away. The short version. There are many side stories among there of t-shirts and Bill Belichick hoodies and all that stuff.
You invented the 28-3 t-shirt, right? You're the inventor, and like Portnoy had to buy it from you, right?
I was the first person to put the scoreboard on a t-shirt. That was, I don't know, I guess like inventor. I just grabbed the scoreboard, but it was pretty cool. It really didn't blow up till my friend Nick Fitzy Stevens wore it on Instagram. And then it blew up so much. It crashed my website. And it was right around the time I was moving back here. So it kind of worked out well. I was able to have
your t-shirt millionaire.
I saw somebody on Twitter was like, I wonder how much Mike Dussault made off of that t-shirt. And I was like, ready to send him a screenshot of my PayPal account because I think it was about like $8 at the time. But like yeah. that, whatever it was, that's what's left.
It's like the, it's the same guy that like he invented the Patriots, you know, the patch Patriots logo, or maybe it was the Celtics logo. It was like a friend of the owner, and he just gave it to him for like 3 cents, and then they just package it and stick it on everything and make millions off the logo.
That's true.
Yeah. So what you're doing now is like you're doing a lot. Are you in charge of the Pat's Time Machine Twitter account?
No, that's done by Neil Perry, who's part of our department. And he did a great job. I mean, obviously the 20-year thing for the first championship was a big deal, and we were looking for, you know, just different ways to approach it. And you know, my project was part of that as well. So but Neil did an awesome job having the Twitter account and going through highlights, really digging up a lot of videos that, you know, I'm sure you guys have seen pretty much everything that's ever, you know, been produced as far as the Super Bowls videos like I have. And, you know, when you find something new, it's pretty cool, you know. And so Neil dug up a lot of stuff. So, yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
The regular season games, which were like, I didn't remember hardly any of those. I was like 11.
Yeah, it's hard to remember. I mean, I was a bit older. I was 16 at the time. But yeah, you watch back, you forget a lot of the stuff, like the Buffalo Bill. Somebody was fumbled but had their arm out of bounds. I can't even remember who it was.
Yeah,
yeah,
and got knocked out. Yeah, he was.
Remember
out,
all
he
the
was
crazy. Yeah, the crazy things that led to the Patriots even making the playoffs or having the home game against the Raiders. So many things that, you know, it's just fun to look back. And now it's just going to be, like, every year is going to be the 20-year anniversary of something now.
Anytime you get to see
I know, that's my job, right?
Yeah.
That's a joke. It's like every year is going to be an anniversary or something. But, yeah, it was fun. I mean, my project I did, which, you know, it was a 2001 a Super Bowl Sound Odyssey, which, you know, collecting a lot of the sounds. But you're right. I mean, that season was just – there was just so much crazy stuff that happened. Like, you couldn't write it between, you know, the coach, Dick Rabine, passing away. I mean, you know, some years I think a coach passing away in training camp would be the biggest story that there was. And it's unfortunate, you know, it's almost buried between then Bledsoe and 9/11 and
the game. I mean, like, oh my God, that happened.
It's just how it all came together. So it was pretty cool. I got an opportunity to talk to a lot of, you know, people who were there. So, I mean, you know, me coming from like a blogger, and now here I am talking to like Scott Pioli and asking him about how they put the team together and what the philosophy was. So it was Mike Vrabel. That was another one I got to interview, which was like, you know, amazing. Surreal.
Yeah.
How was he? You know, was he pretty intense?
Didn't remember anything. Like, it was so funny. Like, he was just like, I don't know.
Was he
like,
smoking cigarettes the whole time? I was in awe of him once. So I had my cousin was very close friends with Lonnie Paxton, and we used to get in the play beanbags after the game. And a lot during those years, a lot of the players would come out and hang out. And Mike Vrabel, I remember till the day I die because I was so enamored. Like, Mike Vrabel was a superstar. It was like a playoff game. He had like 3 sacks. He came out. They blew out somebody. It was cold, and he just nonstop smoked cigarettes. I was like, I can't believe this guy is a real person. Like, I can't walk downstairs and I don't smoke. And he just played an NFL game, is ripping him.
It's a lesson to all you kids out there. Start smoking
early and often.
Yeah, young.
Strengthen your lungs.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think John Daly proved that. That's right.
Yeah. Funny. You talked to Scott Pioli, and I just put something in my mind because. What's been annoying me lately, and I've said it on this podcast a million times, and nobody listens to me because I just ramble into a microphone with no listeners, but it's mostly that I get annoyed that, first of all, there's no compensation, and number two, that you can't develop coaches or front office personnel anymore, because especially with the Patriots and any success you have, somebody's just going to come and take them. Immediately, like the way that Gerard Mayo's getting head coaching interviews now, you know, not so much McDaniels anymore, but McDaniels when he was young, Joe Judge, for instance, Ziegler leaving. So it's just like, I was wondering if, you know, you would think that Pioli or Dimitroff or any of those guys, I don't even know how you say his name, I guess it's Dimitroff, would like, they would pull him back in or could even try and get them to come back if they were even interested. It seems like Pioli's kind of out of the game these days, but. I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like he's making the rounds in the media, I think.
Yeah, it looks like
it seems like he's enjoying it. But, I definitely think you're right. There's been a lot of guys that have left. And, you know, as much as Joe Judge, you know, that's not really getting anybody excited, unfortunately. I mean, I think anytime, you know, coaches leave here and then they go somewhere and then they fail, never really at the height of it. You know, nobody's excited to have a failed coach come back. But I mean, obviously it worked for Josh. And I mean, I think with the amount of guys that they've had leave, they needed to bring a guy like Judge back. So yeah, I mean, that's why everybody's talking about Billy O too, is, you know, somebody who knows the system, you know, can come in and, you know, just enable it to, you know, I know Belichick likes a small staff and, you know, it's like, all right, well, how small is it going to get? You know, and right now it feels kind of like it's him and
his family. It's like his Thanksgiving dinner. Yeah. It's just, I mean, it's almost, I was reading someone today said that it might make sense for Bill O'Brien to come back to be the offensive coordinator. And if he gets a head coaching job next year, Joe Judge kind of steps into his spot. And that's Joe Judge is coming back as an offensive assistant. I mean, I know he coached the wide receivers in the worst wide receiver season they've had in like 30 years. But like, so I don't know. That's not a great start. But
there's plenty of these, all these coordinators who become head coaches. At the time, they're all the best coordinators in the league. That's why they get promoted. So a failed head coach doesn't mean they're not still an excellent coordinator.
Yeah.
You still want as many ex-head coaches as you can get on a staff.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Brian Flores is a great defensive coordinator. He's also a good head coach, and he's probably never going to get a job again, it seems like, right now. I would bring him back in a second, but I don't know.
It's absolutely crazy.
What do you make of that, Mike?
He doesn't get a job.
That's a wild situation.
I mean, it's you know, credit to him for standing up, and I mean, obviously he put a lot on the line to do it. So I think everybody, when you just talked to Patriot fans, every Patriot fan I think was thrilled to have Brian Flores leave, and now you see the guy that they brought in, and you're like, oh geez, some nerds coming in, like, all right, let's go.
know, some guy, home, I don't know.
We just lost what, three straight or whatever it was, three out of four of them. But yeah, I think it's, you know, it's a good point. It's you know, it, when a head coach gets fired, they kind of become a punchline and a laughing stock. And we saw it with Matty P. We saw it with Josh when, you know, he was into Denver. And, you know, so like your point was, yeah, they are good coaches. I don't know how it's all going to flush out. I mean, I think they're still kind of putting it all together. I still wouldn't rule Billy O coming back. We'll see. I mean, I think they definitely need to add some coaches, and you know, it seems that Ivan Fears is probably going to retire. So I mean, they got to figure out some stuff. Yeah,
like nobody left. I mean, yeah, like there's just no development anymore. I mean, everyone's looking for the next McVay. There's like, it feels like half the coaches now are younger than me. I'm 36, and everyone's looking for the next McVay. Is McVay the new guy from? Cincinnati. Both of them are 36. Now the kid from Miami is young. I don't know. There's other ones, but I mean, everyone's trying to look for the
weird
guy.
Hire.
Everyone they can have for 50, 60 years, like have John Wooden as the head coach.
What's crazy is McVay has a coaching tree now, and he's like 33.
Yeah, they're all successful, like, and they're playing each other in the Super Bowl. Yeah. Was he from the McVay? He was, wasn't he? I think. Yeah, he was.
I mean, it's like Shanahan. They're all kind of Shanahan, like.
Yes, yeah, so
they
start with Shanahan in Washington, right?
Green Bay.
Yeah, LaFleur, again, yeah, all of them. They're all like 35 to 40, and Belichick's 88 years old, still doing it. Him and his kids, they eat Fruit Loops in the morning, and then they just show up and practice. Bring in an ex-player from 1999 to be the coach of your defensive line and figure it out by yourselves. I don't know. I don't know how much more energy he could possibly have. Like I originally thought Josh was going to be the coach in waiting, and that seemed like he was probably being paid that way. So now I don't even know where you go. There's no second option. Like if Bill decides to retire in the next year or two, I don't even know who you would hire. Flores would be my only guess.
They have
Sean Payton.
Patricia.
Yeah, Sean Payton.
Yeah, love it.
He has a good movie career. I watched that movie the other day. No, I don't want to talk about
you
it.
Liked
but I did.
It.
I was drunk, number one, and my wife put it on because she said it was good and I didn't know what it was. And I was like, oh, this is the meme movie that everyone was making fun of. And it really was just Kevin James as the coach of the Little Giants. So I was like, this is basically the movie. It was a kid's movie. I don't know why it was. I don't know.
At work was trying to convince me it was good today. He's like, no, it really is.
He didn't think it was terrible. I mean, it was a kid's movie. Like, if the joke wasn't that he was Sean Payton, then it would have been completely fine. It was literally the Little Giants.
Well, it had to be better than Draft Day, which is arguably the worst.
That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
Missed that one.
Hey, that is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
I've established on this podcast that I am not a Kevin Costner guy.
I mean, that's just ridiculous.
No. So bad. No, I won't watch it. It'll make you angry. It'll make you mad.
Like,
it's so bad.
You start watching it, and then you can't turn it off with how bad it is.
What's wrong with it? Is it they're making bad draft picks? It's the Cleveland Browns, right? It's not a true story. It's just stupidity. Yeah.
The ultimate draft cliche, every draft cliche move, you know, like every cliche you can imagine that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I want to watch it. Going to draft N'Keal Harry 32 times in a row.
The player who's going to slip because he's a bat. They treat draft day like they won, like, you know, World War II.
Yeah.
And that's how the dramatic they put behind it.
Now I kind of want to see it. Let's get into the last season. So I was just thinking about Mac doing the gritty the other day. What did you see out of Mac? How'd you like his development through the season? What do you expect from him coming soon?
Yeah, I was excited. You know, I mean, obviously that was the big question last year. And I think everything we talk about with Mac, you got to look at where you were standing a year ago right now, which was you had nothing, you know, you had no idea. I mean, at best you're going back to Cam Newton. So, you know, I don't really jump into college until now. And so I came into Mac kind of like at first, like, all right, who's this Alabama throwing a superstar guy? But yeah. I saw what, you know, they liked in him. And I think it translated into the game. I was excited that he was able to win the job. I mean, you know, we watched the camp. I mean, he was, I think that Giants, you know, that week when Cam was out, Mac, he took advantage of it. And I mean, you could tell that they liked him and that, you know, I think he definitely had some issues. I mean, I thought his progression was good. I mean, it's, you know, it's hard now looking at retrospectives and not, you know, feeling about how the season ended and,
yeah, right,
you know, everything just kind of like you start thinking about how that, and it's like, oof, you know, how did you feel after they beat Buffalo? And, you know, we threw a few passes. So, I mean, overall right now, I feel like got a rookie quarterback who came in and gave you average NFL quarterback play, which I mean as a compliment, you know, like,
yeah, right,
came in and was,
you know, yep,
screwed right there up in the mix, like, of it.
Didn't really take a game over and like, wow, we can't stop him. But that's awesome. I mean, you know, hey, you got him on rookie contract.
That's where you start.
4 years. He's going to get better with these guys. You got all these free agents they signed. They're multi-year deals. So, you know, everybody wants to talk about Jonnu and all that. Like, all right, fine. Maybe they pay too much, but they're going to have some time to work with him and or everybody. You know, Aguilar, too. I know he gets some crap. But I think Mac's got to develop. I mean, I got to look at it through the context of we got to beat Buffalo. We got to beat Joe Burrow. You got to get through Mahomes. I mean, these are, if you're realistically thinking like Patriots back to contenders, that those are the teams you got to really compete and beat. And, you know, they're not there yet, but I think they can get there. But it's, you know, it's another really interesting offseason that I think they got to crush it, especially on defense.
Defense, especially. I mean, it's so funny. Go ahead, KP.
Let me go. So who was your biggest? You mentioned the free agents. Who was the biggest one? The biggest signing?
The best one from this year that we got?
Oh, yeah. In your opinion.
I think Hunter Henry was what you needed to give you a baseline.
Yes.
Like,
you're a good man.
He didn't have any production from the tight end position, you know. Judon on the other side, you know, flamed out a little bit, but I think you really needed that guy too. I'm going to choose to remain optimistic on him, but those two guys stood out. And I thought, you know, Bourne was up and down a little bit early, but I think he gave them some plays. So, you know, it was a good class. I think you had to know you were going to miss on some guys. I think Mills was a little bit underrated as well, but you know, they had to go get those guys. And that gave them, like I said, like an average offense. So there you go. Now you gotta get better.
I think Jonnu underwhelmed where I think Bourne was an afterthought that was much better than anybody expected he was going to be. Trent Brown, right. So, I mean, these guys.
Yeah, what about Godshaw, man? That guy's just a friggin' tank, a Tonka truck.
No, he was like, to me, I need like more from those guys. Like, I loved Barmore, but like, I think big questions on defense and, you know, what direction are they going with like Van Noy and Hightower and, you know, they got a lot, all those guys. Are they going to come back? I mean, it all starts with JC Jackson this offseason, but even if you figure out a way to bring JC Jackson back, I feel like you need another man corner. So, you know, the rebuild continues.
Yeah, right. It's kind of, I mean, the defense kept them afloat for the whole season. Well, not the whole season. I mean, the offense played its way, its part, and then the defense kind of took over middle of the season there, and then it just obviously blew apart in the playoffs. But
yeah, they just didn't have like
any 2019, you know?
Yeah, exactly the same. It's just, the, you know, they
just didn't have the big playmakers
out
when they needed them.
And then, you know, a lot of the old dogs are just kind of, that's it. That might have been their last legs. I mean, I love Hightower, and I wouldn't mind bringing him back cheaply for just leadership purposes, but I don't know. I mean, if they didn't bring him back, I wouldn't bat an eye. I mean, in realistically, their defense has to be rebuilt in the I would say linebacker level number one. And
yeah,
then
put a playmaker next to Duggar, who can also hit in his past. I would love to see
and that. Adrian Phillips. I mean, they can be just they're kind of, you know, where in like 2018 when they won the Super Bowl, they were, you know, they were still big and heavy and they were running through teams like this, you know, running through the smaller linebacker teams. Now they're trying to, or I guess it looks like they're trying to, or everybody wants them to transition to that type of offense, almost, I mean, defense almost. You know what I mean? Like speed at linebacker. But I don't know if Belichick would ever do that. You know what I mean?
The NFL's just changed too much, especially on offense. They're too fast, man. They
you
all
can't really play
run
defense
this
anymore.
West Coast crap. No, you can't.
Excuse me. I know. Well, it's tough. I mean, I feel like you're kind of victims of the moment too. When you look at how they lost to Buffalo, and then you immediately go to the draft and you say, "What guy would have helped us in the draft?" and then try to select him as if he's going to like come in. I know they want to be true to who they've been with the big linebackers and I mean, the big linebackers and the big safeties. I think they need to, you know, find some second level speed, and that I think is one of the biggest problems. But also, too, guys up front, get Barmore some help. Get another disruptive body up front to take some heat off of those linebackers and let them have some space to make plays.
Ted Washington or something. Or,
something like that. I know the big fatty Jordan Davis from Georgia, too, coming out. But, you know,
yeah, he's right in the
like
Patriots
that.
Range. He's like a giant. You know, mountain of
that's an understatement.
Like, what's he do for you against Mahomes? Like, what's he do for you against Josh Allen? Like, exactly. You know, it's like,
can't run
it's,
up
it's,
the
it's,
middle. That's probably about it.
A tough balancing act. Yeah. It's a tough balancing act. And
yeah, so
you know, a lot of old guys, McCourty and everything up.
Yeah, I mean, I think McCourty's still playing at a pretty high level. If he wanted to continue, I wouldn't.
The free safety, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. He would be the guy that I would keep out of their whole like free agent class, besides Nick Folk, who I think is a Hall of Famer now all of a sudden.
Yeah.
He hasn't missed a kick since 1998.
You guys are unbelievable.
Yeah, he's the best. So have you been doing any scouting on the college ranks these days? What do you
there's one good name we're looking for here. There's one name, sorry, Mike, that really matters.
Oh, is it Jameson Williams? I think anybody from Alabama or Ohio State receivers, they like those guys look pretty good so far.
That's all
Treylon Burks. That's the one. That's the only
I've seen from Arkansas. All right, so I'm in the receiver now. So N'Keal Harry doesn't scare you off of him at all. You're
exactly
okay with
what I said.
Okay, so a little bit about me. I'm a diehard Arkansas fan. So. I've seen him in person. I've been watching him since he was in high school. That man is a freak. He's a freak athlete. That's what he is. A freak athlete. Yeah, but I mean,
he get open quick.
Yeah, it's the thing that Mac needs to continue to get better is someone that can get open instantly, like a Julian Edelman type that can get open just in an instant.
Burrow and Chase. They already had the connection. Go get one of those dudes he's throwing it to.
Mechie.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the teams that are left in the playoffs. I mean, you need a dude, you know? They need a dude at receiver.
Dude.
I mean, they did it when it was Edelman and Gronk, and I think together those guys equaled a dude, and they could kind of build around it. But you need a dude. I mean, that's why, you know, it's like with the Alabama guys, if you're willing to take a year, you know, with the ACLs that they're going to need. So, I don't know. I'm not usually a big weapons guy, but I just think you look at what the NFL is right now. And
you also got to
help. You need a guy.
You got to help your guys develop. I mean, they also had people always, they don't say number one because number one is like the guy that you're going to pay $20 million. Where, you know what I mean? Like, Randy but Mom. then they have the conversation the other day. The guy that used to work in Boston. Yeah. Asked if Odell Beckham was close to signing with the Patriots. And he said he was very, very close to signing with the Patriots. So, you know, Belichick is looking to add that, or I don't know if Odell's lying, but who knows? I mean, I don't think he's lying. I just don't think that, it was really that close because he said
right.
It was
well, how
three,
close were you? Because
yeah,
what's like, up, well, yeah, if Tom Brady was there, I would have gone. But I was close. How close were you? Were you about to sign? No, I was going to where I was going to win a Super Bowl ring. Obviously.
Yeah, I was close enough to. If it was 3 years ago, I would have said maybe.
Right, right. Well, they reached out to me, and I was like, no, sorry.
Yeah,
out of probably, spite, though, you know,
Pats were probably the one seed at that time.
I think they might have been at least close.
So probably around there when they were at, but yeah, I didn't think.
But Odell would have been that guy who can get open like quick in an instant and run those quick whip routes and just be open.
Yep.
They need to find someone like that. I don't think you necessarily need like Jamar Chase, a guy that's just on the outside and dominates, but you know, someone like Deion Branch.
No, it's a good. I love Deion Branch. I love that comp, and that's one I've used myself. You know, I think it's just a question of, do you want one of those guys in the low first round, or do you just want one of those pure slot receiver types that are super quick? I mean, you know, I mean, I literally, I'm like 3 days into the draft. I'm like, yeah. I'm talking about these guys like I just discovered them. People are like, yeah, we are. But, you know, it's like there's this kid at UCLA that I don't remember his name right now, but I'm like, it's like a little Wes Welker, you know, and you probably get him in like the fifth, sixth round. Like, you know, so I mean, those guys are fine. I just think as much as you can always find those Wes Welker types, you need a guy like who is a professional receiver. There's just so much of like on the Patriots where, whoa, he's a former cornerback. And you're like, well, can we just get like an SEC wide receiver who knows how to run routes and is really, really athletic. Like,
I can't
you know,
tell you about the amount of times I've complained on this podcast or just to my wall that Gunnar Olszewski is like wasting a spot on the roster being, you know, returning kicks sometimes. Sometimes they'll put Nikhil Harry back there for no reason. But then, but Gunner's there, and he'll return kicks and doesn't avoid anybody. And I'm like, this guy was a cornerback slash safety at a school that nobody knows where it is or if it even exists. And you're like, can you just – I mean, and then you look down, like Tom Brady had 17 receivers. Like Antonio Brown got traded, and then all of a sudden there's another guy up that's like almost as good. And then that guy gets hurt, and then they got another guy that's almost as good. And I'm just like, how do they have eight receivers, and we have three, and one of them is fully on special teams, doesn't do anything else? I didn't understand. They had three receivers, and all they do is special teams. And they screw up
at it. It's funny though, because it's a great tie-in because we, you know, the guys that I do the show with, get to watch all the practices. So we're all watching him, like he could, because he's so quick. Like, I mean, he looks like a little Welker Edelman out there when he runs. He just can't freaking catch. Like, and you get so frustrated because of everybody that's shaking people and getting open. Nobody, like, he's as good as any of those guys, as Myers or, you know, he's as quick and, runs but ball, it's just he gets wide open and.
Yeah, exactly. Because I mean, the shoulder pads to me look like he's in Pop Warner, so that bugs me too, right off the jump.
And at what point do they view like the like catching in the NFL like shooting in the NBA? Like as your career goes on, like you catch 1,000 balls a day. Like eventually, are you just going to be really good? Do they just assume like that's going to develop? Like it feels like a skill you should be able to develop.
Your hands, I don't know. You got to be able to catch, number one, and you have to be able to get open. And if you can't do both of them, you shouldn't be in the NFL. Edelman.
You got me. I got one, Tony. Hold on. I got a tie-in. You went to all the practices, so I assume you're there in the preseason. This is going to make Tony very irritated. How good was Nikhil Harry in the preseason?
I mean, he looks like a horse. Like, you look at the guy walking onto the football field, and you're like, this guy is a monster. But you know, he doesn't win contested catches. He doesn't really have any run after catch. He doesn't play like a big guy. He gets beat to the spot. I mean, I really, really want him to do like, you know, I was all about the blocking and everything, but oh man, it's just frustrating. It's frustrating. I started 2019. So I mean, when I started this, I've seen like every training camp practice played or not played. And he's just one of those guys that drives you nuts. It's a lot of like, you know, the first practice, it was a lot of like going to the ground, getting up and like walk over to the trainer. Like, what's he doing? Like, you know, come on, get back in there, dude. You know, so it was, you know, little bright spots with the downfield catches here and there. I mean, honestly, I think like getting that touchdown call back against Kansas City his rookie year, like what could have been?
Ended his life. Ended his career completely. I was, I was strictly a Nikhil Harry believer. You know, I just thought they had a bad luck to start. I thought, you know, he got injured season one.
And then he quit.
And then, you know, and then he gets Cam Newton his second year.
That's fair. You're right. You're not wrong. I mean, you're not wrong. And that's part of the reason I was excited to see him play with Mac, or just at least, you know, a fairly competent quarterback, I guess. You know, it was, but it looked the same.
It did. And then I was like, all right, you know, Belichick is zigging while everyone else is zagging. He's zigging into, he drafted the best blocking wide receiver of all time in the first round. And I was like, all right, this is fine. This is where we're going to go. And then they sat him down for a week And Wilkerson came in, scored two touchdowns, and the running game still went for like 250. And I was like, maybe it just doesn't matter. I don't know. It didn't help that he asked to be traded on the internet. I was like, that's
like, ah, no.
Like a week before the season.
To where? The CFL?
Hey.
Do they ask you, like, so when you do, like, when you write, do they tell you, because now you work for the team, like, that you're not allowed to be, like, too much of a fan? Like, you have to be someone who, or do they just, like, yeah, we like what you do, just go for it?
Yeah, no, it was pretty cool. I mean, you know, when I was blogging on Pat's Propaganda, I kind of just set a writing schedule for myself of just the things I wanted to write, like, what I wanted to do. This is, I want to write these three pieces, basically. And the crazy thing was, like, I got to this job and they were like, yeah, just write it, write what you want to write. Like, write, like, they didn't, like, I was like, really? Like, I'm like about to hit publish here for patriots.com. Are you guys like, everybody's okay with it? So it was pretty cool. I was surprised. I was worried too, because I mean, you guys, I've probably gathered, like, you know, I mean, Belichick and Bears and everybody that, you know, run the operation down there, they, you know, like to keep a tight ship and want it to be run. And we're in a weird spot because, you know, the team kind of sees us as media, but the media kind of sees us as part of the team. So we're in this weird, you know, nether area. But luckily, I mean, my site was called Pat's Propaganda. So it crossed over pretty well with, you know, but I mean, I think ultimately my point of view kind of were writing for the fans and like an everyday fan who wants to root for their team and not, you know, hear about why they suck or, you know, and reasonable football analysis. Try to, you know, like I said, when I started, I played a little high school football, but I wanted to understand the game.
Don't brag on the podcast.
But believe me, I was the worst high school football player. That's a whole nother story. I'll tell it. I'll give it quick because it's too good to share. I went to prep school. I transferred to prep school. I was a hockey player. I was good at hockey. I would brag about playing hockey. Football is terrible, but I played like in my old school. I was like freshman, played linebacker, loved it. Quit to play hockey. Ended up at prep school, like a week into school, the football coach comes, he's like, hey, we don't have enough guys. Like, we come out and play.
Always
and
a good sign.
Oh. You know, I'm like, oh, I'm getting recruited. Like, you know, like, oh, they need me, you know, like I'm coming in. So I'm like, yeah, you know, I played fullback a little bit, you know, you only need like a middle linebacker. I'm like, I'm in. And like, yeah, we need like tackles. I'm still about the same size. I'm about, I don't know, 5'11", 6 feet, 195 pounds or so. I came into the season. I missed all the double sessions. I think my first day was like a scrimmage against Deerfield. You know, no idea what I'm doing. So a week later, we play our first game like the following Saturday. Okay. Played tackle both ways. Every special team. I did not leave the field. We got blown off the field. Yeah, like, I never wanted anything to be over so much in my life than that game. And the kid was like a professional offensive tackle across from me, just kicking my ass the whole game long. Thank God they put their JVs in the second half, but that's how bad I was.
Yeah, my brother played at a prep school, and I was like, I went to public school on the North Shore, which is garbage. I was like you, I was a 160-pound center, and we won three games or four games my entire high school career. But my brother went to prep school in New Hampshire, and he was on a team, and he was okay. He played with them, but there was like literally kids that went and played Division I football the next year and started for like Virginia in Maryland. And I was like, these guys, I don't even know if you know the name, but he was like a top 10 recruit in the country. His name was Jim Eunice and he played for Gloucester, and he was a like a tight end, like a Gronkowski before Gronkowski. He was 6'6", ran like a deer, was a unstoppable force. He was the DN tight end, which is like what they always are. He was a top 5 recruit, got recruited to BC. He thought, well, that's where he was going. Won the high school Heisman for the state or for the country. And they ran like three plays in Gloucester, and it was a trap play. And I came in, because I'm playing defensive tackle, as a 160-pound person would. So I came through, and I was like, wow, I'm going to sack the quarterback. And nope, I'm being trapped. And Jim Eunice comes and threw me off the football field. Literally just yard. I'm talking double-digit yards I was in the air. At least 11 yards he put me. And I was like, this is just not for me. I'm going to go back to talking on a microphone.
A lot more fun, a lot more easy. Yeah. We cosplay football.
Yeah, it was cosplay. Mm-hmm. My entire team was cosplay. So yeah, exactly. So what do you see next year? I mean, in terms of what they need to get better, this team, the Patriots, because I know that a lot of it seemed like the defense collapse at the end was everyone has on their mind, but that wasn't the problem the whole year, right? I mean, the offense was, you know, struggled a little bit. I mean, now they're going to be losing.
It's a good question. I've been wondering this. I've been pondering this. I mean, I'll throw this out here to, like, to the group. Like, what, before I talk about next year, just because this is what I can't quite wrap my head around. Like, have you ever seen a team that just throttles lesser opponents but can't compete against good opponents? Like, I just have never seen a team that was had that much disparity. And that, like, that, and that's the element that's bugging me. And I'm like, how do you get rid of that? It reminds me a little bit of like 09 and that like vibe, but just like this team chemistry feels off. But I did feel like this was a good team this year. Like, I liked a lot of it, like Kendrick Bourne, Trent Brown, Adrian Phillips. I mean, awesome guys, like, you know, just good locker room guys. But like, it's just what's bugging me, and going back to 2019 too, where it's just like, man, they just they're losing it at the end of the year. Everything that you kind of think about the Patriots of like getting better. Hey, we're figuring out what we do best. We're gonna deploy our guys in the, like, this is our game plan. This is how we play. Like, it's like not working now. So I don't know what that has to be fixed. But I think that's a big component of this offseason. It's like, how do you get over that? Like, what is it? I don't know.
I really think
another odd one is how bad they were at home. That, I know they played the better. They had a hard, tough home schedule, but that's just not Patriot.
Yeah, like, winning on the road and losing at home is opposite of what like 2009 was. They couldn't win on the road. Yep. They were just getting embarrassed by teams, and then they'd win at home, and then you'd be like, ah, maybe they are good, and then they get blown out in the playoffs.
I think it's really, I think it's Mac. I think if he starts becoming a quarterback that wins you games consistently and like is a problem for other teams, like they were in a lot of, like, you know, they lost to Dallas at the end, they lost to the Bucks at the end. Like, they did, I thought they did compete kind of decently against these teams, and the only difference was if Mac is a guy who's throwing, you know, for 350 and three touchdowns some games, like,
yeah,
they could be a problem, because the defense usually is there. No matter who they kind of have for players, they usually have like a, it's not usually the defense that's costing them games.
Yeah, even if you go back to like the 09 to 11 teams, and I was just watching the Man in the Arena from the 2011 season. I'm just like thinking about, I'm watching like the guys in the background, like they're just playing, showing clips of the season, and I'm watching the guys in the defense. I'm like, Jesus, this defense is terrible. I remember them just getting, you would throw for like 6,000 yards on them. I don't remember what it was, but like they were just score. They had to score every single time they had the ball because there was no way the Patriots could stop the pass. They averaged like high 300s in giving up passing. So it was like, if you end up with a defense like that anytime soon, you're in trouble. So you don't have Tom Brady.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, that's, you know, that defense was like the in-between part between like the Brewskis, the Vrabels, the McGinnis, the 07 defense that then 08, 09 kind of fell apart. You had to rebuild it. And it really was down from, you know, 09, I think, was a better defense than maybe we remember it. But still, 09, 10, 11, 12, then you get Hightower, McCourty, Chandler Jones, you know, those guys. And I mean, also in that period, I'll just mention too, I mean, I think the critical part was you got Gronk and Edelman in that period, and that's what they didn't get in 15, 16, and that's why it kind of ran out of steam in 18, 19, the passing offense, because you just didn't have, you know, the next kind of guys to, you know, fill that void. Had they not gotten Edelman and Gronk, I don't know if Brady would have, you know, gotten those next three. But yeah, it's I don't know.
It makes you wonder too about what would have happened with Malcolm Mitchell. If he had stayed healthy, I think right now he's your number one receiver. If he might be number one receiver right now with great, one knee.
Right after the pandemic started, me and Perillo, we did a like a live stream with Malcolm Mitchell watching Super Bowl 51, and it was awesome. He got to like, he had never watched it before, and so we literally sat there. It was 3 hours, way too long. It was pretty tedious, but we basically did like what we're doing right now, but like live streaming the game and watching it together. It was really cool. Awesome guy. Had like, you know, a ton of insight. We're just, I mean, it was 3 hours of just kind of like, what are you thinking here? You know, like what was it like talking to Brady? You know, just off the cuff questions.
That's my number one question to almost anybody that ever talked to Tom. If I find out anyone was near Tom Brady, that's the only thing I want to ask is, what's he like? Because I think I might have mentioned it. Yeah, I did. No, before the podcast, I didn't bring it on. But like sometimes I get lucky to like, I don't know, randomly I'll tailgate with expatriates, and one of them was Logan Mankins.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, dude, this guy, he just parked next to me in this gigantic farmer truck. It was like, it's like an F-750. I mean, the thing was the size of a house. And I was like, that's Logan Mankins driving that car. And he comes over and didn't have any alcohol. So he's like, can I have some beer? I was like, I guess. I mean, you're gonna, the first thing you're going to do is just going to start taking my beers. No, I was just messing around. Okay. So he sits down and I was just like, literally the most intimidating guy I've ever seen. He's like 6'5". He's got a belt buckle the size of my face. And I'm like, so what's Tom Brady like? Tell me, good or great? And he's like, he couldn't give me a less annoyed answer. He's like, he's the same. He's the same as everybody. And I was like, is he really as competitive as they say? I'm such a super fan baby. And I was like, and he was like, yeah, everyone's competitive in the NFL. I don't know how to answer that question. But he seemed to like us because he came back after the game and was drinking again. So me and him are
calling my cave.
Yeah, you guys, I have a picture with him. He's. His hand was the size of my entire torso. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. It's a bad story, but there was a lot of people that were around me that were pretty drunk and they were asking him questions that like didn't happen. He's like, what was it like winning the Super Bowl? He's like, I was in between. He got drafted 2005 and traded the year before 2014. He's like,
preseason.
Yeah. Like in the preseason of the year they won the Super Bowl again. So it just turned into a bit of a disaster, but I don't know where I was going with that story.
I've got a question. Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
I was just going to say, I was lucky. I got my first year in this job. I was Brady's last. So I got like 1 year kind of be around him, see what it was like. So that I'm glad for that.
Well, yeah, did you actually get to like interview him or anything like that? Yeah. What was he like anyway, Mike?
No, I was at that phase. I was, you know, my rookie year, so to speak, in the job. So I wasn't really asking anybody anything. I was just kind of wide eyed, taking it all in, you know, watching him roll in and roll out, you know, super cool. And I mean, it was weird because that was the only year I had before freaking COVID. So, you know, we were in the locker room. We did all, you know, now we've been isolated from them. We haven't really seen them in 2 years, person to person at all.
I would have been working on some type of like a long-term story on Tom Brady. That would have been my first request. I was like, I know I'm new here, but I know I got this down. It's a long story on Tom Brady's entire life. I'm going to write his autobiography, and I have to be next to him at all times.
They would happily shoot you down so hard.
But I'd have to come in with an edge.
Tony would do something more like put a leak in his tire and then follow him as he left.
That is much more like me.
To help him change his tire on the way home.
Start taking little things like Tommy, some of his hair every day. Tom, you left some of your hair on the shower drain.
All right, I'm going to ask a real question now. So, Mike, you watch a lot of practice. How's Anthony?
Great
old buddy.
Pretty
how
getting.
Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, we saw him for like two practices this summer. Last year. I mean, he's a long dude. I mean, he's not as thick as Hightower, but he's built like that, you know, 6'4", 250 long. I mean, he's the prototypical kind of inside outside guy. I think as a rookie, he got thrown into the fire because they didn't have anybody else. He was an edge guy at Alabama. So he did have some, you know, experience kind of a little bit with the Saban of it all, but I mean, I think they threw him in at inside linebacker right away. Didn't really seem to grasp it. I don't know what the injury was. I think he had a death in the family, like during camp, and then he got hurt. It was like we barely saw him. So, I mean, I call him. He's like part of my. I call him the Deadwood crew. It's like him, Winovich, Uche, Ronnie Perkins. It's like all these linebackers that they drafted that haven't done anything yet, and they might have to turn it over to some of them at this point. And I don't really know what any of them have.
I'm excited about I think Perkins is physically the guy has to look. I mean, he looks like he looks the part. We'll give him that. Him and Uche both.
Uche has shown that he can play, and then he got hurt. I mean, what he had like four sacks in the first two games, and then they just basically, like, I know he got hurt, but then they basically just shut him down. I mean, he's another one just like Harry, where it was like, okay. He's the best player in training camp. That every single day, I mean, not just like Patriots fans, it was like reporters, like guys that I trust, like Mike Reese and Jeff Howe, were like, okay, Harry and Uche are taking over these practices. I mean, he looks like they look like completely different people. I'm like, all right, I'm all in again.
Tune in to Patriots Unfiltered. That's me and my guys, and we're live. We do every practice, I'm telling you. Like, we were reading that, and we're like, why is everyone blowing up Josh Uche right now? Like he's getting sacks in like nobody's trying to pass protect. He's just running in unabated to the bag and tagging it. And then we would see tweets and be like, what the hell are people talking about? Like, going into the season, I mean, we definitely have a little snark, you know, on the show, especially with Perillo. But, I mean, I mean, I don't know about Harry, but, I mean, Uche was one where people were blowing him up. And I just, I mean, he was a you know, a designated pass rusher in college. Didn't really have a position coming in. I don't think they've really found a position for him yet. I mean, I think he's an athletic dude. He's quick. He can stop and start pretty good. But is he ready to hop in and do what they obviously weren't comfortable with anybody other than Collins and Hightower and Van Noy doing, you know, and Bentley to some extent, but I think he's more just kind of a traditional middle linebacker thumper. But I think all those guys, that's the question you talk about, like what this year, I think those guys, like what's there, like, are these guys going to have to play? Is it time to rip the Band-Aid off? And we don't have enough resources to like totally restock the defense this year, like we did on offense last year with, you know, four or five new starters in free agency. I think that's the big question, but, you know, I think the point about Mac is great too, though. I mean, if he can make some strides, he gets most of his guys back. They figure out the offensive line with Karras and Brown being, you know, free agents. I don't know. I don't feel great about the long-term tackle depth. I think they need one of those guys. They got to figure out what his story is. I don't, you know, I think this might be it for him, but I mean, I think those are the broad strokes of it, you know, but I think the bigger picture of it is just how do you deal with Josh Allen and, you know, have what you've been doing schematically, is that going to work against Buffalo? Because clearly whatever you've been trying to do against Buffalo in regular conditions, it's not working 0%.
I'm hoping that, and it's a pipe dream wish scenario, that since they were basically running a Patriots style scheme and with a Patriots taught coordinator, now that he's gone, I'm kind of hoping they take a little bit of a step back. I mean, I know Josh Allen was learning, but he's like a superhero now. Like, he couldn't be stopped in anything.
Yeah. And to me, he's like Joel Embiid. Like, he could be the best player in the league if he just decides to be every week.
Yeah. Patriots, he was like, it was like he was playing on rookie level. I don't know what he was. He couldn't miss a pass. He could run as fast as the wind, jump over guys, and then throw a bomb 70 yards.
Break any tackle. He was running off. They're running like single wing offense where they're just pulling the guards and running behind. And he was like, yeah, who's going to bring him down? He's bigger than
nobody.
The linebackers.
Like, Hightower's missing tackle. It just didn't make any sense anymore. And I was like, I don't know. And then like 3 years ago, we were like, Josh Allen's so bad. I can't believe Buffalo screwed this up again. And then I don't know. He just all of a sudden turned into the best quarterback in the league. So I'm kind of hoping they take a step back. Yeah, only against. I mean, he's like, didn't he get shut out by the Jaguars 9-0 or something? And and then he comes up here and just embarrasses the Patriots. He scored like 85 straight touchdowns.
Can't miss a pass.
No, nothing. I mean, that game was over.
Probably not.
The thing about that game is that they would just quit too. That still makes me sick. JC Jackson, which is another thing that I'm hesitant to give him money. Like, you know, not that I'm paying him, but like, I'm hesitant to like be ecstatic about Belichick giving him a super long deal worth a lot of money. Is that he was like a non-factor in that game? Didn't want to tackle anymore. He was like, this game's over. Fuck it, I'm not doing it anymore. And then, I don't know. I guess I don't know what free agent is that crucial to them to bring back. I mean, you need players, like you said, Mike, I mean, to put in these spots. You can't just all of a sudden, you know, draft a cornerback in the first round and expect them to compete next year with Stephon Diggs and all the stars that, you know, Waddle now. And then the Jets got like three or four guys that are pretty good. I mean, who do you even bring back from this free agent class that is a must keep? I mean, I see literally, like, maybe, I don't even see, I'm looking at the list right now, and Devin McCourty and Matt Slater are pretty much my only two that I care about.
I mean, I think before the season, as the season was winding down, I would have said Adrian Phillips, and then they re-signed him. I'm like, great move. You know, I'd bring back, I mean, it's just the low-key guys. I mean, Trent Brown, I'd take him back on a manageable, seems like he'd like being there. Ted Karras, take him back. Brandon Bolden, but none of the, you know, Hightower, like you said, I think it's kind of up to, you know, are you going to, you want to come back? Do you want to, like, we're not going to,
Yeah.
No, that kind of deal.
Nobody's breaking out the cupcakes for Dante Hightower this year, right? I doubt that's happening anymore.
It sucks that he's, you know, it's kind of like Brewski, you know, like at least Brewski was like, you know what? I ain't got it anymore. I'm tapping out now. And you didn't have to like, you know, kind of go through this, like, because I mean, he was up and down. And I mean, certainly Hightower was, you know, physical and, you know, brings an edge to the defense that no one else brings, the experience he has. You know, it's such a difficult situation because you love him, but I think in a lot of ways people are saying that he kind of embodies everything that's wrong with the Patriots defense right now. Is, you know, he's big, old, and slow, which is again the same thing they were saying in 08 about the Patriots defense, and you know, we saw where that was headed.
Right, and so that's, I mean, it makes much, I as much as I'd hate to see it, it just makes a lot of sense for him to like go to Tennessee, where he's from, a team that's ready to win a Super Bowl now. And he can just be like a rotational middle linebacker.
But I wouldn't mind him being that for the Patriots if instead of having like a bunch of other old kind of slow linebackers next to him. Like if he's the old and slow, you can't have them all be old
and slow. No, for the leadership,
I wouldn't mind it.
You keep Dante as the leadership level and then you bring in these new young bucks, kind of like what Brewski was to Mayo for a year and Mayo and Spikes.
That's it from Euro.
Yeah, Brian Cox in 2001. I mean, he didn't really play even that much, but he was like, you know, The
spark plug to the team.
Lights somebody up in the first quarter, gets everybody fired up.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Third and shorts, he comes in like just
bury somebody, gets a penalty.
And Hightower can still play the edge decently well.
Yeah, and he can blitz up the middle. I mean, he does. He just doesn't have that burst. I mean, you take a year off from professional football, it's not going to be easy to come back and just compete. Yeah. Especially, I mean, and I don't even think he has to ring chase either. You know what I mean? I mean, he's got 3 Super Bowl rings.
No, that's why I think he's probably gonna be like, I'm good. Yeah, no,
yeah. It's not like he doesn't have enough money.
Speaking about retirement, well. What are your thoughts on the? I was a little hot last week. I think I ate my words a little bit, but the Tom Brady retirement. obviously, we've all gone through the ups and downs of the letter he sent to everybody. But I mean, what did you think about that as a diehard Patriots fan, but also what do you call it? I forget. I can't even think of anything right now. My brain just completely exploded in my head. So
no, it was weird. I mean, going back, just like, I mean, got a season with him. He announced he was leaving the Patriots. I had to be the one to write the article. Like Tom Brady announces he's leaving the Patriots. I had to write that for Patriots.com. I mean, I never, you know, when I was blogging in my, you know, in my back room, I never thought I'd be the one doing that.
Breaking the news to the world of heartbreak. It was St. Patrick's Day.
I mean, I found this season, the game a lot really cool. I mean, I really enjoyed that. I thought everybody hit the right notes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I love what the fans did, where they gave him a big round of applause. And then, like, as he came to the field at the start of the game, they booed him. And it was like, this is awesome. You know, it's like, game on. Like, we love you. But so, you know, I think that was cathartic for me. It was tough watching him win a Super Bowl last year. I didn't really care. Like, I just couldn't get fired up for the Bucs. I don't know. I mean, I was great. He won one. But it was more about, now I know this is going to be hung around my neck as, like, you know.
He's going to have to wear a stupid creamsicle jacket and go to the Bucs Hall of Fame. Like, I gotta listen to that and watch that.
Yeah, but the retirement was clunky. I mean, I don't know. Everyone got so caught up in the thank yous and all that stuff, and I was just like, my head was spinning.
I personally think I deserve a phone call, but that's
right. I'm like, why is he thanking me? Like, the guy gave me like 20 of the best years of my life. Like, you do whatever you want, Tom Brady. Like, I'm good. You gave me everything I could ask for and more, whether or not you mentioned the region I live or not, whatever. So, you know, but it was clunky, and I mean, I don't know. I always love Tom Brady. I love how he, you know, emerged and what he did and how competitive he was and how he was just so lights out at the end of games. I mean, I think that's what just sets him apart as one of the greatest of all time, is just when the game was on the line, there was nobody better. But, you know, as he kind of became TB12 toward the end, it was like, all right, the TB12, I could kind of do without all this. And now it feels like this is the TB12 part of his life. So
TB12 brand, I was all in. I was like, all right, I love it. I'm a TB12 guy. I bought the book, haven't opened it, but I have it. And then now the Brady brand with the $300 sweatshirts. I'm like, all right, maybe you go ahead and do that. I can't afford it. I mean, maybe you can send me one. I mean, I don't know. He won't respond to my Instagrams. But, I don't know if I can deal with the high-end brand of Tom Brady with the sweatshirts and stuff. I mean, it seems like to me that, like, he was almost forced to retire, and he had everything set up. and like everyone dropped. He probably announced it. Wait, I'm thinking of it as he announces it in that last man in the arena, and then ESPN obviously saw it, and he was like, and then they just basically announced it for him, and he was pissed off about it.
But, no, that whole it was just so clunky. No, we didn't. We haven't yet. Then tomorrow, but we are.
And, they, and then you have to go. Everyone has to go to the bearer of good news, Tom Brady Sr., to get his important opinion.
Now the rumors coming out that it's going to be Jimmy for Tom in a trade. Those are leaked this week.
Oh, to San Fran?
Yeah, because like technically Tampa.
Brady said never say never.
Never say never. And then he also kind of said, yeah, you started saying like,
I couldn't. I mean, I understand it only because Arians literally blew the Super Bowl for him this year. He'd be in the Super Bowl right now, 100%. If Arians and Bowles didn't decide to run a blitz, inexplicably run a blitz on the last play of the game. I mean, the most insane
best receiver in the NFL.
The best receiver in the NFL, they left a safety on him and literally just blew Brady's last shot at the Super Bowl. I wouldn't be surprised. I would have fired Arians before he left the stadium. That's why I don't know.
I thought they were going to another one. I thought they were going back. I really did.
They should have been. I mean, who was going to beat him? They would have crushed San Francisco, and they would definitely destroy the Bengals.
I don't know why. You're just such an anti-Bengal. You think Joey B doesn't have it. I'm telling you, Joey B.
Big Joey
special.
Burrow guy this week. I'm a big Joey Burrow guy. I've been big with Joey B since LSU days. I saw his – he looks like Brady to me, except for he's got like – he's Tom Brady never had receivers like this. He's got three number one receivers.
Yeah.
I mean, Jamar Chase
the Bengals will mess it up.
It will. I mean, they shouldn't be there, but it's a good story. But, I mean, it's – they don't have the defense to like really compare them to a 2001 Patriots, but it's probably the last. I mean, who else? Maybe there was a couple six seeds, but they were always very good that made it to the Super Bowl and won. Like the Ravens did it and the Steelers did it, but they were always like right there.
The Giants.
The defense in the second half of that Chiefs game. Like, I don't even know half these guys, and they just completely shut Mahomes down. Like,
yeah.
Where did this come from?
Yeah, I mean, I guess they're. This is probably like the real first, last. Yeah, I think. KP, you're probably right. Like the 2007 Giants, but before that, it was like the 01 Patriots was the last real Cinderella to make it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but this team's loaded with talent.
Yeah, but still.
My last question goes across the board.
You got a last question?
This is it for me. You have one food that you can eat, and this is only one food for 6 months. You can only choose one thing. What do you got?
What is this question?
This goes for everyone.
One food forever?
For 6 months, you can only eat one thing. You're stuck.
Do you gain weight, or do you?
Doesn't matter.
You do gain weight.
Who cares?
It is. Tyler said it is what it is. You know,
breakfast
you
burrito.
You really shut that. You brought this thing to a screeching halt.
No, I've got one too. Let me go off the wall here. You
anti-vaxxer. You anti-vax. You anti-vaxxer.
What's the best time zone to watch NFL games?
Oh. Christ, what is going on at the end of my podcast? I've lost control, Mike.
I love that. I love that question because I lived in California, man. I love it. 10 a.m. kickoffs. Oh.
I was about to ask what that was like. I remember, Tony, you remember we were in Hawaii and we were watching the Pats at 8 a.m.
It was 7 a.m. It was 7 a.m. We watched the Patriots win the division against Buffalo. And
yep, I remember.
I think it was the 2011 season. Yeah, the one that went to the Super Bowl.
It was.
Oh, I loved it. I mean, when I was – like prime of my 20s, Patriots were awesome. I'd go to Santa Monica, Sonny McClain's, this Boston bar. People would be lining up, reserve seats. You know, they'd have a halftime giveaway. You know, it's like 10 a.m. You're like, I'm ready to start drinking at like 10:05. You're like, I'll have a yeah.
I can't do that because I'm a very poor. Loser, and especially if I'm in a I can't be in a visiting stadium.
They're not.
I'm risky. Somebody's going to catch these hands, trust me.
But the West Coast, they have, like, you're around only other Patriots fans. It's all Boston.
Yeah, they have, like, designated bars. Yeah.
There's occasional, like, I remember one game there was a Dolphins fan. At, like, the beginning of the game, he would be, like, you know, the only person clapping. Like, the whole bar would go quiet, like, Miami first down, and you just hear this one guy clapping. And, you know, it was hilarious, though. As the game started to turn, he finally got, like, booed out of Sonny McClain.
One year I went to London. And this is going to lead me to my next question, actually. I went to London, and I was just there with my wife. And I have to see the Patriots game. So I researched ahead of time, like, sports bars for in London to watch NFL. I found one. It was like a 45-minute train ride. And definitely wasn't the close. It was a terrible Google job by me. And I sit down, and there was this it was NFL. It was an NFL bar, and they tried to have American buffalo wings and shit like that. And it was the poorest attempt at buffalo wings you've ever seen. And I swear to God, they had every game on, but each one was on a TV that was like a 12 by 12. And the Patriots was, you know, it was the size of a postage stamp. And some guy was a soccer hooligan. I walk in, and he just starts... He's just, I'm wearing my Tom Brady jersey as one would. And this guy's just harassing me, saying the worst things he could think of about Tom Brady. I'm like, I'm with my wife eating terrible buffalo wings. I'm like, I'm going to get arrested in London because I have to fight him. He's disparaging Tom Brady in this London bar. There was literally like, I'm not even joking, like six people there. And I was like, I got to fight this guy. I just, let's do it. He calmed down. He apologized, but it was nuts. But actually, they just leads me to my next thought is they announced today. Actually, a 2-part question, but the and then we'll wrap it up. But they announced today that they have they're going to start playing games in Munich this year, and I know the Patriots have a you know, like they have the advertising rights for that. What are your hopes? I'm hoping that they get to go and play in Munich like ASAP.
Yeah, they will. I mean, they'll play in the next 2 years. I don't know if it'll be this year, just because you know how this year we got the home 17th game with Dallas. Mm-hmm. So next year, 2022, our 17th game will technically be an away game against the NFC. So I think those are usually the games they're going to use. So it is a home market for the Patriots now. Like, you know, they divided up kind of all these different countries, which is cool. So I don't know if it will be this year. It still could be. But I think if it's probably going to be one of the 2 years, I think it's going to be next year, which I believe is in Frankfurt. So Munich this year, Frankfurt next year. Oh, so it's pretty cool. I mean, you know, we do the radio show, you know, Patriots Unfiltered. We get calls from all over the world. I mean, it's kind of, you know, Patriots.com, it's kind of a touchstone for international fans. We have a lot of international fans, and that's a way, you know, they don't know really what ESPN Boston or Boston Globe is. So for a lot of fans, it's been a way into the team. So we've been doing stuff with Germany and, you know, for years. So it's pretty cool. You know, I'm super psyched. I'm hopeful that I'll get to go. So we'll see. I don't know.
I'm going to be the Oktoberfest kid if I'm over there. I don't even care if it's October. They have that game in December. Yeah. I'm going to be having steins on steins. But I'm already locked in for the Vegas game next year. So I don't know if I can do 2 away games. They better wait a year. I don't know how far.
Look me out. If we're all over there, look me up. I'll be hopefully there.
Yeah, we'll be there. I'll be in full on Lederhosen.
We'll be in Vegas. Vegas is a lock.
That's a definite lock. So the last thing I want to do before we let you go, and thank you so much for being here, by the way.
Yeah, appreciate it. It's awesome.
Great. Yeah. And so the new Mike Florio book that came out this week, or it's coming out, he mentioned that the PSI, you know, how it all went down, the PSI numbers were basically just destroyed and basically proved the Patriots' innocence. And today. Yeah, Goodell. Yeah, Goodell gets up and does his pre-Super Bowl thing where he announces the Munich thing, and then today he says, somebody asked him what happened to the PSI numbers, and he's like, I honestly have no idea. I mean, first of all, I'm annoyed. I want my literally they should get their picks back.
I mean, a number one draft pick, a first round
pick, and a fourth.
Like, yep. What are we talking about?
Tarnishing the greatest player of all time as a cheater, suspending him 4 games. I mean, I don't know how the league can take itself seriously and literally prove themselves wrong only to stand by their result. And it's Troy Vincent of all people. I don't know how they go about that. They're never going to admit it, but like
sitting on the golden goose. They got the print, their NFL, they're just printing money. I mean, the results of the games last week, it's all that matters. And like, you know, I mean, I'm totally with you guys, and I've been apoplectic since it happened in 2015. I at one point was thinking about writing Deflategate the musical. I was so fired up about it. That didn't make it very far, but I mean, that's, we were talking about on the radio actually just yesterday. It's crazy how the NFL, they can be so poorly run, so, I mean, just like corrupt, and it doesn't matter because it's just the owners are running the show, and they've got a great product, and everybody loves it. So that's all that matters, and it sucks what they did. I mean, but hey, the Patriots won that Super Bowl, so
yes, it did. I mean, it did.
But if they get a first round pick back, man, I would be pumped.
Now, can you imagine that'll never happen, but they just gave them their first round pick. They'd be like, all right, you can have pick number 33, which is technically a first round pick. Yeah, first overall, you get whoever you want. We fucked up. I love that idea. So anyway, Mike Dussault from Patriots.com, the content creator. Thank you so much for being here.
Appreciate it, Mike.
Yeah, couldn't have had a better time. Yeah, and I hope that to have you around more. I mean, we do this and literally just vomit into microphones. So
this is literally what I do almost every day.
It's great.
All right, man. Well, I appreciate it. I'm going to shut down this thing right now. Do you want to promote anything while you're on? Or
no, hey, off season. Let's go. I don't know. Patriots draft. Let's find some good players and win
do
some
something.
More games.
Yeah, exactly. As always with us, join the Patreon. The Patreon's getting up there in fans. Patreon.com/MalcolmGoPodcast. The Discord server, Malcolm Go Podcast. And, you know, as always, you can find us on Twitter, Brady Disciple, Malcolm Go Pod. Maybe it's Tyler, and I don't even know what KP's is. Doesn't matter. He's in there talking about guns and ducks and dogs. So, till next week, go Pats.
Do your job. All right, don't try to make too much out of it. Just do your job. 7-8 months ago, right? All for this moment. It's about honor. It's about respect. We win this game, your honor! Your kids are honored! Your family's honored!
Stack receivers, two to the right. Russell Wilson extends the hands he has. Wilson, quick throw. And it's intercepted! Intercepted by Malcolm Butler! Butler has it at the one! Malcolm Butler!
And Warner goes back to throw, and here's the blitz by Mike Brady. The back. Field goal attempt. Set to go. Snap ball down. Kick up. Kick is on the way. And it is good.
It's good. It's good. Adam Vinatieri booms a 48-yard field goal. And the game is over. And the Patriots are Super Bowl champions. The Patriots are Super Bowl champions. The best team in the
league.
Hey.
Did it.
I love you, man.
Did it, bro. I love you. I love you. You're a
You're the greatest quarterback in the world, man.
Hey, I love you, man.